Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Another brand new day. Manifesting, Using Thought Forms to Visualize Real Change, is a new book by Von Breschler. Von has appeared on Night Dreams with Gary to discuss his book, Time Shifts. His new book, Manifesting, is a practical look at developing human consciousness with focused intent to accurately project thought power with impact. It's based on ancient wisdom tradition in Raja Yoga, with the magic of advanced consciousness yoga, with exercises extracted from ancient sutras. Like Time Shifts, Manifesting is now available in bookstores or online at Amazon or the Barnes & Noble website. A companion book to Manifesting is a February 2021 release titled Mysterious Messages from Beyond. It examines thought forms that we receive from unseen messengers, from ghosts to distant friends to spirit guides. Read Manifesting, Messages from Beyond, and Time Shifts by Von Breschler. Are you into UFOs, the real stuff? Selected by Extraterrestrials Volume 3, My Spoken Words, William Mills Tompkins. Volume 3 covers his amazing story, what he saw in the Battle of L.A. William was a special assistant to Admiral Rico Botta to find out all about the Nazi connection to E.T.s during World War II and connection to Antarctica. This is a must-read. Selected by Extraterrestrials Volume 3. Available on Amazon in January, edited and compiled by Dr. Bob Wood. Meet the Totally Ninja Raccoons! Three raccoons who become ninjas because they already have the masks. The Totally Ninja Raccoons books are short adventures with quick chapters specially structured to encourage reluctant readers. Each book has the Totally Ninja Raccoons encountering a cryptid. The monsters are presented in a fun, not-so-scary way.
Hey! I said not-so-scary!
Readers are encouraged to do their own research and make up their own minds about the possible existence of Bigfoot, the Jersey Devil, aliens, and more. The Totally Ninja Raccoons are available on Amazon or at your favorite bookstore. You can buy autographed copies direct from the author at kevincoolidge.org. That's kevincoolidge.org for the Totally Ninja Raccoons.
I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. And yet, I ask you, is not an alien force already among us?
Night Dreams brings on the night worldwide. Did you know you can find us on your favorite app? And now you can watch us live on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to our channel and give us a thumbs up. And now, here's Gary.
And here I am. Boy, I'll tell you, the last 2 weeks has been really rough. I still don't have my voice back as normal, but I tell you, getting sick with this virus is nothing you want to play around with. It really, you know, hit really fast. One day I was feeling good. The next day it started out with a headache, muscle ache, and then I figured, oh, I just got the flu. Nada. It wasn't the flu. And I tell you, when you lose your taste buds, everything, the smell is gone. You have a migraine for weeks. It won't go away. You feel like you're dying. And then towards the end, you'll have a day where you feel like you're almost totally recovered. And you say, wow. Then 8 hours later or so, you're sick again. And that's how it's been going. And my son, it took him over 3 weeks just to even be able to get out of bed. That is how bad it is. So I'm not telling you to go out and get your vaccine shots, but I don't know. One thing I'd recommend, I took a lot of vitamins and stuff like that, and I did get vaccinated. I wasn't sure if that's something I wanted to do, but I did it, and I got a strange feeling, and my doctor even told me I probably would not be here right now if I wouldn't have got vaccinated. So, I mean, if you be careful. Well, you know, the grocery stores, at least here on the West Coast in the Seattle-Tacoma area, is getting mighty bare. And not just that, the cost of food has gone up drastically. And that is shocking. You know, we go to the major stores. I normally pay like $2 and something for a loaf of bread. $5 for a loaf of bread up here. Crazy. And I don't know what we're going to have here when it comes into March, when the feds start jacking up the interest rates. Again, I keep telling people, you know, if you got credit card debt, try paying it down as fast as you can, because you're going to be shocked when you get your bill come April. So I'm just warning you on that. Well, James, it's been a while since I've actually talked to you on air. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good, Gary, and I'm glad to hear that you're doing better. And we're headed for major storms coming across the Midwest, so I hope your weather is much better.
Yeah, you don't even have a fireplace, do you?
No, well, I do, but they're sealed up, unfortunately.
Yeah, what would you do if you lost your power for a couple of days? Are you going to run around in a jogging suit in your front room?
Yes, I've got one of them Steve Austin jumpsuits I'm going to put on, but I've got these old gothic candle operas laying around. Looks like something in the old movies. I'd light them up, and I'd be good. I'd be okay.
Well, I hope so. I mean, that is, you know, this time of year, the weather is changing. You know, we've had how many different scientists on the show, and you get one in the campground that says, hey, it's not changing. It's all made up. And then you got the other ones that saying, it's definitely changed. But, you know, if you read the news and you go back and compare the weather last year and keep going back 10, 20, 30, 40 years, you'll find we are changing. And that's scary. Now, to the listeners, we are now expanding the show. I'm still going to be on Tuesday to Friday. You're stuck with me. But then we have Thomas now, as you know, on Saturdays. We got those bugs fixed out with him. And then Sunday, we got Bob Clark coming on to do a Sunday show. Now, Bob will be on at 4 p.m. Pacific time, I think 7 p.m. Eastern time. And he has a great guest this Sunday, Barry Taff, going to talk about the paranormal. Well, we'll be right back with our guest. You're listening to me, naturally, on Night Dreams Talk Radio.
Take a journey of adventure and discovery for the enigmatic giants of the forests. Read On the Trail of Bigfoot by Mike Dupler. The author himself describes it this way.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Found possible Sasquatch evidence, namely trees driven into the ground upside down, thought to be territory markers, led me to investigate this creature in my native Ohio. Several years and many forays into Bigfoot territory, I have found incredible evidence, which inspired my book, On the Trail of Bigfoot. Bigfoot is alive and has many fantastic abilities. The evidence is out there for all to see, but you need to know what to look for. My book will inspire those who have answered the call to seek this elusive creature, the Bigfoot. The truth is out there.
Read On the Trail of Bigfoot by Mike Dupler. Available now at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and IndieBound.org.
Hi, this is Val Von Torn of Metatron Power and Light. You're listening to Gary Anderson and Night Dreams Talk Radio.
And that is me. Well, James, who's our guest tonight?
Well, our guest tonight is Mr. Peter Robbins. Now, he is one of America's most respected investigative writers specializing in the subject of UFOs. Now, Peter has lectured on UFOs both here and abroad, and he has appeared on many, many documentaries.
Well, Peter, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Fine, and thank you.
Well, how's the weather where you're at?
Relatively cold compared to other parts of the country. I live in central New York State, and the temperature is now probably in the balmy 20-degree range, but that's definitely better than the last week or so when it was hovering in the low single figures.
Now, how long have you lived in the New York area?
Well, I've lived most of my life in New York City, but can no longer afford to do so. So I've lived for about 15 years here in this beautiful part of central New York State, about 5 miles or so from the small city of Ithaca, best known for Cornell University.
Oh, wow. I getting out of the city, I think you probably enjoy where you're at more, don't you?
Yes and no. I love New York City probably more than any place in the world, but things have changed dramatically, and I think we struggle, many of us, for a balance between culture and nature in our lives, but tend to lean one way or the other. I'm very happy to be where I am right now, but I miss the action and the culture and all of the remarkable aspects of being in that great city.
Well, I can tell you that. You can get great pizza, too, in New York City. I got to ask you, what's your opinion about disclosure? I mean, a lot of people in this field have all different ideas of what disclosure, how it's going to be. Some people think it's going to be earth-shaking disclosure. I've been hearing the word disclosure, honestly, for more years than I can even remember my name.
My thoughts have changed over the years, I think, like in many subjects for us. I have separate kind of departments of what I hope and what I think. What I hope is that somehow reasonable, rational, honest disclosure can be come from officialdom at some point, officialdom in this case meaning some aspect of our government. But I don't see that as a reality, barring the unforeseen. And let's face it, we are talking here about a subject that is rooted in mystery with a great deal more speculation than absolute empirical fact informing our opinions and thoughts. I think disclosure is inevitable on a certain level, Gary, but I think it's not going to be presented to us on a silver plate. Our government, which is where the secret keeping began, has too much invested in continuing their lying and their hiding of the truth. In a very human sense, I think a very real reason is the embarrassment associated with having carried on a deception of such a sweeping and outrageous nature for three quarters of a century. That for starters. It's very hard to simply turn around and say, well, all that stuff we've been saying for all this time is wrong, and we've always known that we're not alone. And some of them may have our best intentions in mind, others not so much. But we're helpless to do anything about it, really, and that's been embarrassing to us tough guys, alpha males here in Washington for 75 years, so we continue to lie about it. It's very difficult to see a turnaround on that. At the same time, who knows what may be coming down the pike at us in terms of some extraordinary information dump or leak that in its own way proves to be undeniable or undeniable to most rational thinkers, as opposed to, you know, more internet-driven rumors, myths, legends, conspiracy theories. So I am an optimist in thinking that, in fact, by a certain definition, disclosure is happening now. It has been happening for some years. It's just not the way many of us imagined it coming down. One of our primary assets in bringing disclosure to the fore as a more or less formal movement has been the great Steve Bassett, who is tireless and one of the most dedicated people I've ever met in my life on any subject whatsoever, who is our lobbyist in Washington, D.C. against UFO secrecy. And there's no better man driving that train. However, I think where it's bearing fruit over the years, as I've seen it, is in establishing groups around interested and passionate individuals who, on the first level, are there to educate each other and then kind of take that on the road, speaking at local libraries, publishing, forming their groups, and not just here, but all over the world, literally all over the world. The only downside there is that things continue to expand arithmetically rather than geometrically, that we still represent a very modest percentage of the population at large, and we are not, we're still some distance from a tipping point in populations accepting this as a matter of fact and demanding more information about the subject.
Well, you're right on that. You know, years ago, if somebody would come up to me on the street and say, hey, you know, do you believe in UFOs? And started talking about UFOs and abductions, I would kind of take a couple steps away from them. And my mind, I would think, hey, this guy's a little bit off of his, you know, his oars are not in the water. And you know, it's come a long ways. But, you know, again, what's happening, too, is you got people, you know, really pushing for disclosure to happen. But here's what I see as doing this for so long, Peter, is there's a lot of disinformation going on. People that,
oh gosh, yes,
they think they're an expert in the field. And they're an expert on researching on Google. And the bad part is that on the internet, then everything is real to them. And so you got these people, it's really gotten thick in the mud on this. You know that.
Yeah. I think that's a very accurate observation, sad to say. And the fact is, we're in a completely unregulated field that has no kind of watchdog, so to say, if, with some exceptions. If you are a member of MUFON, which is the largest UFO research organization in the world, although it's still only X number of thousands of people, it has that title and has earned it, and you have trained to become an investigator, and it's a good training. And then you're caught having faked information or not been truthful in an investigation. You can lose your credential to investigate, but let's face it, to be a ufologist, or a word that is now being attacked and in our picayune and very pedantic criticism of language per se, I don't know what the word is anymore that's the most effectual. But to be a ufologist, you pretty much have to touch your finger to your nose, turn around three times, and you can declare you are one. And
wait a minute. You forgot the one thing. You got to tap your foot three times. I said that on Stephen Greer's website the other day, or his group page. A lady was posting, well, how do you make contact with UFOs? And I said, well, you go out at 1 o'clock in the morning, you look up the sky, and you turn three times and tap your feet three times, and then they'll talk to you. Here's the problem. I'm frustrated. I'm not going to mention names, but there, I've had people on my show, Peter, that wrote 30 books on UFOs. And every time they get farther and farther out. Yes. And when you get people doing that, it really damages what you're trying to do. What I've been trying to do for years on radio is try to get as much of the truth out as I can get. Now, you know, we both had a friend that we talked a minute about before we went on the air. And you know what he always used to drive in my head?
Yeah.
He would say, this is nothing more than entertainment, and take it as that. But the thing is, it's gotten really cloudy. And and the for a little bit of disclosure we get, there's more disinformation coming out.
I couldn't agree with you more. And I have to say, it's really a breath of fresh air to hear a colleague, a broadcaster, say what goes through my mind every day. one of the ultimate ironies.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This for me is I'll be a guest on a show. And occasionally I'm introduced, as James kindly introduced me tonight, as either an expert on UFOs, which I always have to laugh at and correct, because it really is the ultimate oxymoron. I'm an expert on the unknown. Let's think about that for a moment, folks, and have a laugh, because we just canceled our own ticket. I know more than most people because I've studied the subject so thoroughly and for such a long time and come at it from so many directions. But when all is said and done, I know for a fact how little I really know. I do know, though, that we are not alone, and that that illusion is continued to be fed by the forces that be, because they likely feel that the truth will be too disruptive and make society at large more difficult to control, manipulate, this kind of thing. But the best we can do as independent practitioners is the best we can do, which is keep our bars set high. I'm very careful to separate what I absolutely know and could prove in a court of law, if such matters were adjudicated in that form, and what I strongly suspect but can't prove, what I'm concerned might be the case, what I feel frightening alternatives might be. But they are just that. They are highly informed speculation almost always. And that frustrates some people because, well, you're an authority on this. You've written books. I've seen you on television. You've been in documentaries and, you know, you've spoken at conferences. How come you don't know? Well, I don't know. And I will respond to questions very often with that as the answer. I don't know. I also have to object to those who, rather than say, this is my conclusions based on years of work, this is what I absolutely have come to believe, this is what I am sure is the case, this is what my research has led me to understand, as opposed to this is, and simply stated as an empirical fact, as opposed to your opinion, no matter how strongly you hold that opinion. Reminds me of one of my all-time favorite quotes by the great Mark Twain, which is the difference between the right word and the almost right word is the difference between the lightning and the lightning bug.
Well, you know, here's the thing. You know, I look at the people now are grasping at straws, not just in ufology. It could be on, you know, cryptics like Bigfoot or whatever, okay? Mm-hmm. But what they're doing now is a lot of these people I've had on the show are saying, well, maybe they're coming from time, from the future, coming back. Or maybe they're something paranormal and they're not coming from off-world as such. And in my mind, I look at how vast the universe is, and the galaxies, and the everything. And I can't believe we're the only people walking around, you know, singing, you know, let's enjoy life. I think there's other things out there, and I think we are being visited by something, or some buddies, not just one.
I think there's a number of things going on, quite honestly. And that a percentage of truly legitimate, genuinely anomalous UFO phenomena is represented by hard machines of advanced technology under intelligent control from parts unknown, coming and going with impunity for reasons we can only guess at. other legitimate UFO phenomena very likely falls more in the philosophical realms, most noteworthy and first put forward by Jacques Vallée. And I would have to include John Keel in that as well. More esoteric, more ethereal. But to simply dismiss, as some individuals have tried to do since the get-go, that pretty much all of this stuff can be explained away in a conventional manner would be kind of funny if it wasn't so incredibly insulting. We are dealing with, and to quote a famous document from 1947 by, I'm blanking on the general, but the phenomena reported as something real and not visionary or fictitious.
Okay, now, Peter, we need to take a break. We'll be back in 2 minutes. And let's talk about that, and then I want your feedback on Roswell. Because to me, that was the biggest disclosure ufology has ever had. Mm-hmm. And, and some people come back and say, well, that's past day. That happened 47 or 48 years ago. That don't count no more. Well, it does. And then we can go into what happened after World War II. The government, this is not the only panel right now with Congress and investigating ufology. I mean, it's happened with the Pentagon and Congress and Senate all the way from the early 50s. And there's been three programs. People keep saying Blue Book, but there was two programs before Blue Book. So we can touch base with all that when we come back with Peter. You're listening to Peter and me on Night Dreams Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Night Dreams Talk Radio brings back Bumper Music Fridays from emerging new bands. If you'd like to have your band's music played as bumper music on Night Dreams Talk Radio, it must be an original piece of music you or your band wrote, and you must give us a release to use it on air. Contact us at nightdreamstalkradio@gmail.com or go to our show's website at www.nightdreamstalkradio.com and click on the message box. In Carter Bouchard's Evidence of an Enigma 1 and 2, he documents and chronicles Sasquatch behaviors from nearly 400 witnesses from all over the North American continent. These events run the gamut, from mundane road crossings to mind-blowing quantum or paranormal skill sets, mind speak, possible hypnosis and infrasound activity, to appearing and disappearing from view, literally just a few feet away. One family from BC, Canada, has endured 40-plus years of interactions that continue to this day. The witnesses he has interviewed wanted nothing more than a safe place to tell their stories without the fear of ridicule and scorn dished out by non-believers. He has delivered his riveting personal interactions and those of everyday people whose lives were altered forever in his two books. Quite simply, there is more to these beings than most ever imagined. Sasquatch, Evidence of an Enigma, Books 1 and 2. Get them now at www.relichominid.com. Did you know Night Dreams Talk Radio can promote your product or service? And it will be heard by one of the largest audiences in paranormal talk radio. Contact us at nightdreamstalkradio@gmail.com or go to our main webpage and use the contact box at www.nightdreamstalkradio.com. Night Dreams Talk Radio brings you talk radio like you remember, with your host, Gary Anderson.
And this is UFO Week, and if my voice sounds off, well, I'm still recovering from COVID. I tell you, it feels good, after all these weeks off, not being behind the microphone. Every time 7 o'clock rolled around, I was going crazy. I wanted to be on the air, but I couldn't even talk. Well, Peter, we are back. You know, that's the whole thing. You know, people dismiss what happened in the, you know, late 40s, like 46, 47, and in the 50s and 60s about UFOs, what was going on, the government panels investigating, the Pentagon investigating. And, you know, back in the late 40s, the Pentagon took UFOs as really serious objects.
Yes, they certainly did, and that is reflected in the authentically declassified documentation, which is available to really anybody at this point in time with a simple internet search. And many of us have built archives and files of these documents. I think, sadly, especially in America, history is a subject that's just simply not of interest to the general public all too often, when, in fact, it's crucially important. It is a living thing that continues to mutate, if you will, and repeat itself, especially if we have not learned its lessons on the last go-round. One of the, how can I say, perennial criticisms that or tweaks that I get from folks who are, they're interested in the subject, but they're not interested, or they're interested, but they're anxious, and so it comes through with a little sarcasm, is Roswell's been done to death. There's, it either happened or it didn't happen, whatever it is. Every possible aspect's been covered. Any evidence that's available has been found, and move along. Nothing to see here. The fact is that it continues to be the godfather, so to say, of UFO cases. Research on it continues by a very dedicated cadre of individuals who are worthy of our respect, many of whom return to that area repeatedly or live in the area or are more or less full-time archivists, researchers, interviewers in the service of advancing what we do know about that important story. A good friend and close colleague of mine and yours as well is Donald Schmidt. Don is certainly one of the most respected Roswell research specialists in the world, and has written a number of outstanding books, not just good, but really outstanding books on the subject, with two co-authors, Tom Carey in Pennsylvania and Kevin Randall in the Midwest. And just this past, beginning of the month, my first show on Meanwhile Here on Earth, the weekly radio show that I do, on January 3rd, Don returned as a guest, and we spent quite a bit of time talking about more recent research and his and Tom's books, Witness to Roswell and Children of Roswell. I hear and I read a certain amount of dismissive remarks about witness-driven testimony. Granted, there are, of course, issues with it. It's pointed out repeatedly that if 10 people witness or witness part of a conventional auto accident, they will all have slightly varying memories or takes on it, depending on level of shock, the point of view that they saw it from, how much they actually saw, et cetera, and so forth. But they all saw it, and they all have accounts of it. And Don and Tom and Kevin, on their own over the decades, have contacted, spent time with, verified the involvement, directly or indirectly, with something like, I think, over 600 individuals.
Oh, yeah.
None of whom were in it to make money or write a book or be on television or gain something other than put their memories on record. Because in many cases, these were not pleasant memories. And the amount of data that interlocks, that is supported by other independently researched material, is really impressive. I had the privilege of working for the city of Roswell for several years as a conference organizer for their big annual event, and also as a liaison between the Roswell mayor's office and the office of the governor at the time. I visited Roswell 5 or 6 times over the years. I continued to read the new materials as they are available, and I think it's a very important case for folks who think they are knowledgeable on the general subject of UFOs, and it's also a very important place to begin, or at least partially begin, one's personal inquiry into the greater subject. It is a very rich area for learning about the basics of what came into our transom in the summer of 1947, and what we did our best to make believe wasn't there, and to lie to the American people, and by extension, the people of the world about all these years.
Well, yeah, and let's be honest with you. They got caught in their lies numerous times about it. I mean,
yep.
And the truth came out. Let's face it. Somebody overstepped their grounds that night when they released to the news media that, you know, there was a crashed UFO and they had the remains. That was a no-brainer. They made a mistake. And by a couple hours, I'm sure somebody, you know, got their butt reamed big over it. And that's why they naturally changed their story. Because I could imagine the generals in the Pentagon, the president, everybody freaking out saying, we got a crashed UFO. Somebody opened and overstepped their bounds to announce that. And then that's when the lies started coming in. And if you really, you know, look at their lies, people, I mean, outrageous lies. I mean, they came up with a couple of different stories over it and figured people would be naive. And here's the problem, Peter. Some of these people believe that Roswell never happened. They believe their stories. They never believed, like, the military people knocking on people's doors and threatening young people, young kids, parents, everybody. Hey, if you go around talking about it, you know, you could end up in the desert.
That's right.
I mean, there was a lot of... Why would the military be sending people to the people's doors and scaring them if something didn't happen?
Bingo. It's easy to dismiss it if you've never looked at the evidence. And therein lies a basic problem with the world of serious UFO studies, which is beginning to change markedly, that because of the incredibly effective attack on the subject by innuendo, by sarcasm, by overt, dismissive, outrageous claims in the most pseudo-scientific manner put forward by the major media, led by the venerable New York Times, and I'm sure highly approved of by the forces that be within government. By the end of the summer of 1947, the general population knew, in quotes, that flying saucers were not real, and were manifestations of everything from war jitters to concern about the Soviet threat to testing of new weaponry to possibly the Russians testing of new weaponry to mass hallucinations, you name it. And so scientists, people in academia, politicians kept away from the subject like poison, because to be caught even considering it seriously in a public manner, the ridicule could be incredibly vicious and, in fact, career destabilizing in some cases. What we are now seeing is the ridicule dissipating markedly over the last few years. And by example, major politicians, and it doesn't matter the party or the affiliation, now taking the basic subject seriously because they know they can, and because there is a subject to take seriously. The two best examples I can think of off the top of my head are Marco Rubio from Florida and Kirsten Gillibrand, one of my senators from New York State here. One a progressive leftist, the other a conservative rightist, both of whom take the subject equally seriously and want to know more about it and its cover-up. So we're on healthier footing now, but it has been a long, poisonous period, and the changes are just beginning to become more endemic in culture.
But here's the thing, Peter. Do we really want to know if they are real? Here's the point. You know, I, again, have had guests on, I'm sure you have, that they think ETs are here to save mankind. They give love and orbs and, you know, they abduct people and they experiment on people, supposedly, and then they tell them, hey, you got to save your planet. And then I think if these ETs are here to help us, look what our climate changes. Look at all the wars we've had on. Look what's going on with the virus. Look at society. Why haven't they stepped in and helped us if they're here to spread love? That don't make logical sense to me. And do we really want to know if they are lovable creatures and want to save mankind? Or do I have to go and get my own barbecue sauce for them?
I think you touch on a major subject here, Gary, and it is that we are overwhelmingly likelihood, and this is based on not hard fact, but 40 years of critical thinking, deductive reasoning, and educating myself as well as I can, that we are dealing with a myriad of intelligences and factors. And it's the human prerogative to first assign, are they good or are they bad, as your first question, when that may have nothing to do with what they're about, or in some cases may have nothing to do with what they're about. It's our experience of them, or our politicking about them, or our hopes and longing about them, superimposed on, how can we say, spheres of influence online, that there are almost dueling clubs, religious groups, affiliations, cults, if you will, and groups of free thinkers that have solidified their views and decided, I know what's going on here. And the aliens that I am convinced are here are acting in this manner for these reasons, and I believe this, and they're good, and I need to educate people about this. Well, maybe, or maybe partially, or maybe in your view, but maybe not. And that there may be other groups of other intelligences who, we may be somebody's graduate experiment gone horribly wrong.
Oh, yeah.
And students have come back to try to correct it to get a better mark, allegorically at least. Or we may be living on a planet that means a great deal to some of these other intelligences as well as us for reasons we can only guess at. They may have been sharing this place with us since time immemorial and are not pleased with our being such poor shepherds of our host, that we are literally the infestation, that we are literally the
disease.
We are the disease. We are the plague. We are the COVID of our host body. And if we can't get our act together and reverse the damage that we have historically done, that we are continuing to do, that simply the attrition taken by growing populations, if nothing else, continues to feed, we're not just in real trouble, we're in real big trouble, and it's going to be coming down on us even quicker than just climate change alone. I don't know what it takes to, grab society to grab populations by the shoulders and give them a shake and say, this is real, this is happening, we're not alone. And the sooner we can find a way to acknowledge that in a manner that people really get, the sooner perhaps we will see ourselves first as human beings rather than whatever nationality we are, or religion, or socioeconomic group, or racial group, or gender, or what have you, and begin to see that we, because we have more in common with each other as human beings, maybe there are ways that we can set aside some of the profound differences that we perceive that we have and work together on common solutions, because the world isn't what it used to be. It's a village now. And what goes on in one neighborhood of the village is going to affect the other neighborhood sooner or later. It seems to be kind of a gaga kind of phrase, but the fact is we're a small planet and our problems are amplified from every single corner of it. And one of them is this maintained chosen ignorance about a subject that is screaming for acknowledgement, and that more and more people are taking seriously and helping other people to take seriously as a result.
There
and
is.
And that's a good thing.
There is, but then there's the other people who are out there trying to make a buck.
Oh, and, boy, and those, are there ever.
And those offend me big time, and I'm not mentioning names, but I'm going to say this. All through man time on Earth, walking on Earth, we have been savages. We're still savages. Wars have been going on all the time, constantly. They don't stop. People are killing people for no reason. I mean, crime has gone up. But if you look at it, there's always a war in Africa, Middle East. There's everywhere constantly going on. World War II, Korea War, Vietnam, which I was in. And you sit back, we are still savages. We are. And then you get these people who say, well, maybe these ETs are, you know, wanting again, like I said, spread love. But maybe just because look how long we've been walking on Earth and look, we're still savages.
Yeah.
Just because they are from another solar system, galaxy, or down the street, we don't know what they are. They could be savages just like we are, only 10 times worse because they have technology to back it up, what we don't have. Or they could be loving and spreading orbs. And if the government knows this, and let's face it, there's been more crashes than Roswell. I've had a retired police officer in Washington near Westport. You know, there was a crash in the 60s, supposedly. But everything proves to that whole circumstance is that it was a crash. And witnesses saw an object coming down. The military was down within hours, you know, picking up the pieces and transporting it out and closed the area off. I mean, there's been crashes worldwide, and we're not being told the truth. And you know, I get people on, Peter, that tell me, well, the population can handle the truth. I don't think so. If it's not positive, if they're not giving out orbs, right? And free suckers to us, and they'll say they're the other type, and I'm not saying they are, but if they're the other type, what we don't want to meet, will the government come out and tell us the truth?
Yeah. You bring up the big questions, and it's one of the reasons why this is still such a sideshow. Every time somebody in the field, and the better known, the worse, says something completely untenable, like there are, substitute your favorite number, 57 different alien civilizations visiting this planet at this time, a small fuse in my brain explodes. And I want to throw a drink in somebody's face. I mean, there is no way that anybody, no matter how deeply embedded their contacts are within the intelligence community, or how well connected they are to the world of officialdom, or how many alien civilizations they channel, that they can know a fact like that to be certain. It's actually incredibly insulting. It's the same thing as saying, and this has also been stated by people who should know better, all aliens are good. Excuse me? But how stupid do you think I am to accept an outrageous, unprovable generalization fairy tale like that? It's as silly as saying all aliens are bad. And I have to say, aliens is a word I've never been comfortable with in this respect. They may be have as much right to be called natives of this planet as we do, just because we don't know that, you know, they come from here as well, but a different dimension or far underground or what have you. Again, all of this is speculative. So much of what is put forward is based on this seeming need of people to have absolutes when none exist. And they're just more comfortable hearing somebody who knows how to wield a sentence and, you know, hold their head right in good lighting on television, saying something absolute, no matter how absolutely silly or unprovable or outrageous it is. And that's the world that we're stuck in here with this. Again, the best that we can do, the best that you can do and I can do, the guests that we have on our shows, the colleagues we associate with, is keep our bars set high, tell the truth as best we know it. If we realize that we've made an error in our research, our judgment, correct it, and correct it publicly until it's understood, then move on. Separate what you know from what you believe. Separate what you believe from what you can prove as an absolute, etc., etc. It's not as sexy, it's not as exotic as saying, you know, on this date a battle was fought underground in this location, yeah, and a treaty was signed with the aliens, as Bud Hopkins used to say to me, and Bud had a wonderfully dry sense of humor. They don't have to sign a blanking treaty with anyone. They can do whatever they want. And to add these little notes of human drama, and I stop myself right here and say, and it could be true, but don't tell me it's true because you think it's true or you believe it's true, or you want it to be true, or because there's information that leads you to suspect that it could be true when you don't know it is. It's simply another possibility. And don't take it out of that realm until you can present something that proves otherwise. And I guess I have a different threshold of what I call proof and evidence than some of my colleagues do.
Well, you know, I get frustrated. You know, I had a guy on who wrote a lot of books who makes outrageous claims that, like, you know, for example, UFOs, you know, have a base under, you know, in California out in the ocean. And they have a canal that goes from the Pacific Ocean, from California to Area 51. And they come into Area 51. And under. And I'm going to be honest with you. I know some famous people, okay? I also know a two-star general who was retired last year from the Pentagon. There is no underground, you know, what people think there is in Area 51. It, you know, and there's no canal going, you know, tunnels coming from the Pacific Ocean to Area 51. That's ludicrous. But yet people buy stuff like that, and that's what does damage. Yeah. Or you get the guy who says, well, my wife is in the car, and she can just point at the sky, and a UFO appears, and then she can move her finger around, and that UFO follows her finger around. I cringe when I hear stuff like that. I mean, I'll be honest with you. You know how many times I've had to replace monitors in the last 5 years? Because I like drinking tea. And when I hear something like that, now this is before I went onto YouTube here recently. People didn't see what was going on. My monitor would be all covered with tea. I mean, let's face it. I mean, some of that stuff people spread is really out there. And people buy it.
It's true. It is true. And again, I think in this day and age, as that special friend that you were referring to earlier of ours and an inspiration and a mentor to us both had said, it's entertainment. What we have now passing for UFO education, for lack of a more descriptive term, is in part UFOtainment, or whatever hybrid word you want to choose for mixing a certain amount of knowledge with a certain amount of something that's fun and recreational. I don't begrudge anybody the right to earn a living based on their work. And if you've researched a book or worked on a documentary or done something, you know, if it were another area of academia or real world studies or related to, you know, a National Geographic documentary, you would be paid for your work. Same if you're a published author. But to set yourself up as some information guru, and in this golden age of unregulated, outrageous conspiracies, say, see, the fact is that these two guys on that radio show that you listened to the other night were indirectly criticizing me. That's because they're part of the establishment. They know I'm onto something. They want to take your attention away and keep it boring and, you know, talk about all this dry stuff from old documents and things when I know about these tunnels under this area. And of course they're going to lie and say that they're not there. Who are you going to believe? And make it into a cult of personality, and very often a very well-paying one.
Oh, you're right. Now we got to take our final break. This one's about 4 minutes long. We're going to be back with Peter. And then when we come back, Peter, I want to talk about what I heard when I was in Vietnam. Then we can go back to, like, the Korean War, what was going on. Oh, I'm losing my voice. And then we can talk about prior, before Project Blue Book, on the last half an hour. So stay tuned. We'll be back after this break. So everybody, get ready for a real ride.
If I have a soul, soul. If the ice is cold. If I last forever. If I'm your man. If the time is over. If the night is my cover. If the life is to suffer. Now you go.
The more I think, the more I'm lost.
know Night Dreams Talk Radio now has a great store? And now's the time to get that Night Dreamer, that cool Night Dreams tea, or Bigfoot mug. Night Dream Store has lots of awesome items to pick from, all for the Night Dreamer. For details, check out our show's website at www.nightdreamstalkradio.com. From author Paul Wallace comes The Scars of Eden. Has humanity confused the idea of God with memories of E.T. contact? Do our world mythologies convey our ancestors' ideas about God, or are they in reality memories of extraterrestrial contact? How do ancient stories of contact, adaption, and abduction relate to people's experiences today? The Scars of Eden will take you around the world to hear firsthand from our ancestors, contemporaries, and renowned researchers. Recent revelations from the Navy, the Pentagon, and French intelligence bring the reader right up to date. The Scars of Eden, available on Amazon. Are you searching for deeper answers when it comes to experiences with the Sasquatch and other cryptids? One man who seems to be taking that deeper dive is Ron Moorhead. His incredibly clear, scientifically vetted Bigfoot Sierra sounds will send shivers. In addition to these recordings, he's written two books, Voices in the Wilderness, which is the chronicle of interactions that went on for years up in the Sierra Nevada mountains, and then his latest, The Quantum Bigfoot, where he bravely goes where others fear and takes it head on, again, backed by science. The disappearing tracks, the pixelated images, and the screams in the dark. All of this and more can be found at ronmoorhead.com. That's www.ronmoorhead.com. Now, on Fridays, you can call in and talk to Gary and his guest. Gary will open the call lines at 8 p.m. Pacific time each Friday. To call into the show south of the Rockies, the number is 1-253-203-6681. That's 1-253-203-6681. East of the Rockies, the number is 1-253-203-6777. That's 1-253-203-6777.
You're listening to my husband, Gary Anderson, on Night Dreams Talk Radio.
Are you into the paranormal? Then you have found the right place. Night Dreams covers the topics you want to hear. And Gary always has a great guest to take you for a real ride in talk radio. So, buckle up and let's go for that ride with Gary.
And I'm ready to take you for it. Now, Peter, you know, when I was in Vietnam, you know, there was talk with other service personnel about UFOs. And there was still a standing order that if you encountered one, to open fire on it. And a lot of people don't even realize that. And then not just Vietnam, the same thing happened during the Korean War, that the military had an open policy. If you saw an unidentified object, you were to open up fire on it. Two bad things were happening.
Not only is that true, I also had a good and true friend, one of my first mentors in the area of UFO studies, who had an extraordinary UFO-related event happen to him when he was in the infantry in Vietnam, I'm guessing in the mid-60s, which he shared with me and my first contemporary colleague, certainly back then, Antonio Huneas, who went on to become a highly respected UFO researcher as well. And the individual was Pete Mazzola, who, when we knew him, was a tough, no-nonsense, highly decorated New York City police detective who was also a crack UFO investigator. and had founded an organization called the Scientific Bureau of Investigation, which had, not surprisingly, a large number of police officers as members. And he shared with us an event where the Americans were on one side of a river and pouring fire on the North Vietnamese and Viet Cong on the other side of the river. And at a certain point in the heat of battle, Pete realized that the firing was falling off from both sides, and things got quiet very quickly. And they heard the officers on the other side of the river yelling at their troops, and looked up, and coasting in very slowly over where they were fighting was a very large disc-shaped object, emitting no sound at all and moving very slowly and then holding its position over the river. And then the American officers started to yell at their troops, and everybody started to fire at this thing. And the next thing he knew, everybody's guns on both sides of the river are raised, and they are all shooting at this thing. Nothing seems to be making contact with it. And after a relatively brief period of time, it simply coasted away and out of sight, followed by a cessation of shooting on both sides, and then officers on both sides once again ordering their troops to start firing at each other again. I mean, how emblematic is that of the madness of war and fear of the unknown?
It's scary. And, you know, it's not even that. In Vietnam, there was reports of where, you know, patrol boats going up the rivers, which I've been on a few of those. You know, they opened fire on an object, and then, you know, one of the patrol boats, you know, blew up. And it turned out what they were firing at this object, everything they were firing at them was being returned back to them. You know, yeah, you can take a gun and shoot it straight up, and that bullet's going to come down. But, you know, it's not just even that. When you go into the Korean War, the same thing. Things were going on there, too, where UFOs or these objects would appear. And, you know, we were told to fire on them. They fired on them, and bad things happened.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, and you, these people would come home and tell these stories. And people go, yeah, okay, maybe you were into something while you're over there. It's a lot of things that, you know, it's slowly coming out.
Yeah.
And that's what tells me, are these things, you know, real, or, you know, are they friendly? I've said this numerous times. You remember Republic Airlines? You should
yeah,
be. Yeah,
vaguely.
They were a big airline at one time. And I, one of my friends was a vice president of Republic Airlines, and during and they had a lot of vice presidents. I don't remember what division he was in, but during Vietnam, he was a colonel. He would fly from Guam to North Vietnam, drop his load, and then return. And the story he told me is on his last return flight, there was an object off the wing, and he got his crew members. Everybody saw it. It was a disc. It was a UFO, and it was following him. He said the biggest mistake he ever made is he got on the horn, that's the radio, and said, there's a boogie. There's a UFO or an object following us. He was in what he said. He was instructed to land, not to disembark his aircraft. He would be taken, and all his crew members would be taken in for interrogation, which they took each crew member, separated them. When they got out of the plane, they took them in, and they basically had to sign documents that they never saw that object. Him, what he told me, he wanted to make general. He really was looking to make general. That was his goal in being in the military. He was told after he made that blunder by announcing what he announced that he had two ways to go. One, he's never going to get promoted. And his best thing is to well, ask for a discharge. Then he chose, well, you know, that to depart from the military.
Yes.
And he said for years that really ended his career of anything. And, you know, he was happy when he got on with Republic, first as a pilot for many years, and then he worked his way up. But, you know, like he told me, he would instruct pilots, if you see anything, you don't see it. Don't announce it, because if you announce it, that's the end of your career. That's it.
Well, again, this long-associated, deeply entrenched ridicule that thankfully is dissipating greatly these last few years. But up until early 2018, it was suicidal on a certain level in terms of your career or wanting to be taken seriously or maintain your standing within your university community or your law firm or the laboratory that you work at or the government office that you were employed by. Otherwise, you believe in flying saucers? You know, when you come right down to it, it seems so counterintuitive that this subject got branded the way that it did. Perfect example is, let's just say, you and I were neighbors. We lived in houses on the same block. You know, and I saw you one afternoon and I said, you know, the damnedest thing happened to me the other day or last night. I was playing with the kids or walking the dog or making something on the barbecue or mowing the grass. And I looked up and I saw this thing or these things that were of unconventional shape, that moved in ways that I didn't know that anything could move aerodynamically. And they behaved in these manners. They made no noise. I've never seen anything like them. And I wonder what it was or they were. In an otherwise sane, rational world, I'm going to make an educated guess and say that you would either say to me in response or think, gee, that's interesting. I wonder what they or it was also. Is that a fair assumption on my part?
I think so.
Okay. How did it happen that somebody saying, I saw something in the skies that I couldn't identify and I'd like to know what it is, get wired up at the deepest level with, hi, I'm mentally ill, or I'm looking for attention, or I'm a complete mystic, or I think that this is a way that I can make some money or become famous or scam you for some reason that I want to embarrass you. None of it makes any sense at all. And that is really a testimony to the power of the disinformation campaign that so won over the public in the summer of 1947 and for 70 plus years had its hooks into pretty much everybody. And if you buck the system and try to go against it and just act on principle, like, say, a Dr. James McDonald, you would get crushed. You would get crushed.
Oh, yeah, you would. And that is the problem. Let's face it. At this point, the government doesn't really have to spread disinformation. All you have to do is go onto the Internet. There is so much disinformation. There isn't a day that I don't get emails from people telling me outrageous stuff, or I get these doctored images of UFOs. It seems like everybody's seeing UFOs and taking pictures of them. And when you analyze them, they're not real. They're not UFOs. They're anything from bugs to, you know, a orb created from the reflection of their lens, of their camera, or it's a aircraft. But these people are so obsessed with it. I don't know if there's people out there who want 2 minutes of fame. Or, I don't know. I think we don't need disinformation from the government. We're creating it ourselves out there. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it's true. And this is what passes for, well, education on a certain level among some people
in this subject. So, you know, to come back to one of the earlier points that we were touching on, it's really easy to understand with a certain sense of, sadness, if you will, why this subject has been so brilliantly flummoxed and static for so long. It makes people uncomfortable. It robs them of the myths, the legends, the lore, the beliefs that they find most comforting. I know for me personally, the childhood UFO sighting that I had with my sister Helen over the house that we grew up in on Long Island, New York, was so overwhelming to me in what it represented that I repressed the memory for many years before I was able to deal with it. The idea that if what I'm seeing is what it seems to be, namely disc-shaped objects in the sky, holding their position with making no sound, able to maneuver in extraordinary ways, obviously metallic, that everything that I thought I knew, that I had learned from the adult world, was now open to interpretation. And I found that subject so disquieting and so uncomfortable that I just shut down that part of my memory and for years until I was able to deal with it. And when I was, my life changed dramatically.
Well, you know, it opens you up because, you know, myself, I wasn't a child when I had an encounter, but back in the mid-70s, coming back from a job I had in North Carolina, we got through the deserts of New Mexico, me and the wife I had at that time, in the middle of the night. It was dark. We were going through the desert, and all of a sudden, my car lit up inside, and all around the car was brighter than daylight. It was so bright, I couldn't even focus on anything. I pull off the side of the road. In my mind, I think, okay, it has to be a police helicopter, because I was speeding. I'll admit it. And I get out of my car, and the light was so intense, but I didn't hear a sound. And believe me, I've been on dozens and dozens and dozens of helicopters in my life. I know what they sound like. And there was no sound of a helicopter. There was no sound of the desert, which was totally eerie. It was just totally dead of any void of any sound. And then, poof, it was gone that fast. I don't know what I seen to this day. I don't know what it was, but it was eerie. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
I still wish they would have abducted my wife and not returned her. I'm sorry.
I'm not even going to touch that. Yes. It's so hard to convey to somebody that has never had that kind of experience or sighting or life-changing event what it's like. And unless you've had it happen, unless you're a particularly open-minded, empathetic person, it's very challenging, let's face it, to wrap your head around it and say, oh, sure, these things happen, and just because it hasn't happened to me doesn't mean it doesn't happen to other people. Thankfully, there are many people that have that attitude. But I don't hold it against somebody if they say, yeah, right, people are being abducted by aliens, you know, through ceilings and plate glass windows and taken who knows where to have who knows what done to them. Right. I think I prefer to believe that that's overactive imaginations and some mm-hmm. weird psychological aberration. And, you know, until I learn better, that's going to be my point of view. Because if that's real, then I don't live in the world I thought I did. And I can't handle that. So you're not telling the truth, and I'm keeping my ears closed. Thank you.
Well, here's the thing that don't make logical sense to me. Again, you've been in broadcasting for a while. You know what it's like. And, you know, through the years, I've had so many people, you know, telling me they were abducted. They were all this stuff. And, you know, I get these people on and say, well, they're collecting DNA. Well, why would they have to constantly, for year after year after year, keep abducting all these people and experimenting on them. And the lucky ones get returned. The ones that aren't lucky go well wherever they go. But why would they have to keep doing it over and over and over again? I mean, look at what we can do with DNA right now. And who knows what we actually can do, because, you know, they're not going to tell us. But, I mean, if somebody, a civilization is far more advanced, I mean, they definitely don't have to keep impregnating women or taking DNA and or taking people and experimenting on them and then returning them. That part don't make sense either.
Well, I'll jump in here as devil's advocate and say, number one, that part doesn't make sense to us, but there may be an overriding plan or operation or movement or standing order in place that's we just don't know the particulars of, and if we did, it might make sense to us. The other thing is, let's just say that a reason that individuals are taken repeatedly and that it follows in family lines may just be to monitor a being, a bloodline that you have already established certain basics about, and see how they are being impacted upon by environmental changes, by changes in the world that they live in, absolutely, scientifically, or more ethereally, and keep that database a living thing, which now more than ever might be of value to them for, again, reasons we can only guess about. And one of the theories that I've heard put forward, and it's no better or no worse than some of the other ones I've heard or thought about myself, is that they, having a more advanced knowledge of a number of things than we do, may well have ascertained that at a certain point in the future, and perhaps not that far in the future, maybe a few hundred years rather than thousands or tens of thousands of years, the climate on this planet, the ability to sustain life the way that it does right now of the human sort and higher evolved forms is going to be increasingly challenging, and that one of the things that may help us survive and perhaps them, purely theoretical here, is beings that have DNA drawn from both them and us, and that may be what or part of what this hybriding is about, something that many of us take very seriously. Again, it's so frustrating, and at the same time, for me, this is just the way it is, to not be able to speak in terms of absolutes. And I get why people who do, even if they're absolutely full of it in doing it, are considered so attractive to so many people looking for answers and feeling lost and anxious about this subject in general and wanting a voice that makes them feel good about what may be happening, that these other intelligences are good, and that anybody who says they're not is evil, and that there are no bad aliens, and that they are here to save us, and, you know, it's just another kind of series of fairy tales to help us feel more comfortable in life, a little more secure, or that this is not as mysterious as, you know, some people would like us to think.
Think of this. Let's look at the other thing, okay? Male sperm rates. Or I hate to say drying up, but they're going down. And at this rate, they're talking about in the next couple hundred years, the population is going to decrease a lot. Now, again, maybe a civilization, you know, each planet is going to have a different time factor. And what is time? But maybe they're winding down humanly, the human race, by altering our DNA where, you know, we're slowly going to not be able to have children at one point and let our civilization die off, you know, nicely.
Yep.
And maybe our world climate is not the type of climate they want, and maybe they're changing our climate over a slow period to match that. I don't know. That's what I say. I want the government to come clean, but they're not going to. No government has ever come clean. They give us a lot of propaganda, and that's what we're going to get. Now, I just want to say, Peter, we could go on another hour easily. I want to thank you for coming on. How can they find you on your show and whatever you want to share? Go ahead.
You can follow me at any point on Facebook, where I post wherever, whatever I'm doing or wherever my activities are. Obviously, most of us are not out and about at live events right now, although I hope to be speaking at a conference in Hull, England, the first weekend in May. More details on that to come. But the main thing you can do if you're interested in following me to some degree is listen to my weekly radio show, which is called Meanwhile Here on Earth, and which you can watch or listen to live on Mondays, 7 to 9 Eastern Standard Time at KGRADB, KGRADB for digitalbroadcasting.com, or on their YouTube channel, or on their Facebook page. And Meanwhile Here on Earth is also available in audio form at no cost on Spreaker.com. I'm very proud of the show. It continues to draw first-rate guests and elicit some very dynamic conversations, and that's where I'm spending a lot of my time and energy these days.
Well, you know what? I'm glad you were on, and, you know, stay safe. Were you out there, Peter?
Say one more time.
I said, stay safe out there. You know, with all the viruses that's going around in the news today. I was reading, now it's mutating again. So it's going to be, you know, who knows? Maybe for the next couple hundred years, we'll be wearing masks. Which maybe if you're out dating, might be a good thing. I don't know. Well, Peter, I want to thank you so much for coming on.
It's been my pleasure, and continue to heal up. And I hope by next week your COVID experience is just a memory.
I hope so, my friend. You take care.
You too.
Okay. Well, James, who's our guest tomorrow?
Well, our guest tomorrow, we have two guests. Matter of fact, first guest is going to be a Mr. Paul Blake Smith, talking about the 1941 Cape and the President Eisenhower's Close Encounters. The second guest will be Jason Martell, coming back to talk about Planet X.
Oh, that's going to be interesting, too, because now, you know, NASA and a lot of scientists out there say that Planet X does exist. Now, is Planet X going to, at one point, come flying by Earth? Is it going to clean our planet off? I don't know, but maybe we can find out some of that stuff. Again, all week long, all the way to Saturday, is UFO week here on Night Dreams Talk Radio. Make sure you give a thumbs up. Tell your friends about us, you know. And if you haven't subscribed to our YouTube channel, please do. If you're listening to us on iHeart or any of the apps out there, I want you to, again, give a review of the show. You guys are very important to me. And without you, the listener, we wouldn't be at where we're at. And again, to all my friends out there, the truckers that keep America moving and the world moving, I just want to thank you. And to our guests, we've had some guests today out of country, you know, Ireland and some other places. Again, thank you for finding us. Hopefully you'll come back. Well, till tomorrow, everybody have a good one. And, you know, I enjoyed having all you guys listen. So take care. Proven velvet Abbey Road, who will battle the end?
city.